I want to talk tonight about meeting good fortune and bad fortune. And I use that first word very intentionally because it's all about what we bring to the experience. Our minds are sort of like containers of a mix of stuff, memories that have given rise to mood or assumptions, things that we call our values, our prejudices for and against things. I kind of call this the wallpaper of the mind. You know, we don't notice it. It's just there. We think that's the environment. But then there's also the more immediate past. It's like, how has the day been going? Is it one of those days where everything just sucks? You know, no matter what you do, it's not working. And whatever this is, it's probably not going to be good either. You know, have you been picked on that day? Have people treated you badly? Do you feel like you haven't measured up? This is what we meet every new moment with. When I bought my current house a long time ago, a couple of neighbors ago, there was a young man and his grandmother living next door. I had been doing hospice work for a couple of years, and I met the grandmother, and she was in kind of the end stages of emphysema. She wasn't able to move very much, and she had a great deal of anxiety because it was so hard for her to breathe. And also she knew she was nearing the end of her life. And she asked me, well, what is it like dying? As if I had any experience. But, you know, I had observed. And I said, I think that it's what we bring to it. It's a lot like standing in line at the grocery store. Whatever our experience is with the person two people ahead of us who's incredibly slow, or the person behind us who is fidgety and making noises and bumping us with the cart, or the charming person right in front of us who, you know, has been doing us favors and been very nice. How does that push our buttons, that total experience? I don't know that my neighbor got it, that we're different moment to moment. And keeping track of that is an art, but it's a very valuable one. One of the biggest problems that we have with turns of events is that we tend to take them personally. And when we do that, whatever first impression we have formed of the situation, we get stuck with. Now, the usual first impression would be, this is really good, or this is really bad. Or every now and then I manage to get all the way out of the grocery store without having any particular kind of an experience. It's just neutral. I bought my food and household products and I'm out of there. And I'm fairly content. Not memorable, it's just neutral. So that judgment at any time that we say, oh, this is good, this is bad, it's going to be like chewing gum on our shoes, holding us to an attitude a way of seeing what's going on. There are days when we get kind of into crisis mode. I don't know, maybe you're really mellow and this doesn't happen to you, but we can get into kind of a frame of mind where we realize we don't know something, or things aren't developing the way we expected them to. We've been working at something and it's just not panning out. Or, you know, someone shows up unexpectedly at the door with news and we don't like it. And because we're in this sort of agitated frame of mind, it's a crisis. And we go into a kind of a panic mode. And the problem with that panic mode is that I get this a lot when I'm cooking. And unfortunately, the product suffers as a result. That panic mode does not promote clear thinking. In fact, it does actually the opposite. And it's taken me years to get over, you know, when I realized that the vegetable has been steaming long enough, but the salad's nowhere near ready, I want to start doing things really fast. And that's when I cut myself trying to get the salad put together, or I burn the entree, or it's that idea of, I've got to fix this crisis. I have to meet this crisis. And I've been trying to train myself that when I have that feeling, I need to slow down. Gil Fronsdell, at my last retreat, said that he's a very busy guy. And when you look at what he has done in any given year, it's enough to make me want to go take a nap. He says that whenever he feels like there's not enough time to do what he needs to do, he needs to go and meditate. And the result is, there's enough time. Whatever he's going to do, there's time to do it. So I'm trying to train myself when I'm in the kitchen, when I feel like it's a crisis, to relax, not do anything for a little while, and see if I can shift my mind out of that panic mode. So I don't know if by now you're getting the idea that bad situation isn't necessarily what walks through the door, or the email, or the telephone, or whatever. A bad situation is what our minds create. And the converse is true. That very often, it's part of a much larger flow of events. For example, I love this story about the farmer whose mare, the only horse on the property, is lost. She decides to go someplace or something, gets out of the paddock, and the neighbor comes over and hears the news and says, "Oh, that's terrible." And the farmer says, "Well, we'll see." So the son, the farmer's son, goes out and looks for the horse and finds her and realizes why she strayed off, because she's visiting with a very handsome stallion. So he comes home with two horses. And the neighbor says, "That's terrific." And the farmer says, "Well, we'll see." So the next day, the son gets on this basically wild stallion and tries to tame him, teach him to take a rider. And it didn't go very well. Son landed on the ground and broke his leg. And the neighbor says, Oh, that's terrible. Well, we'll see. So there's the son sitting on the porch, can't do any work. He's got his leg splinted and wrapped up. And down the road comes the conscription gang, the press gang, to take him into the Navy or the Army. This is a couple hundred years ago. And they're not at all interested in the son because he's got a broken leg. So the moral of the story is, you never know. So how can we work with this? What do we do in the moment when our mind is telling us it's a bad situation? Or, you know, there's some kind of trigger that starts us down the road to gloom. The first thing is to check that what's called the third foundation of mindfulness. And I'll just give you the list quickly. There's a body. There's liking and not liking and neutral. That's the second foundation. And the third foundation is the mind. And by mind, again, I mean mood, attitude, beliefs, values, the wallpaper. So look at what is behind your judgment of the good or the bad fortune. Why am I calling it this? And what you'll find is kind of that chewing gum on the shoe. The thing that makes this situation something you're going to cling to in some way. And it has the marvelous effect of, you know, you have the opportunity to scrape it off and not get so stuck. Then, if it's still there, if you're still kind of emotional, look at that. Not in terms of the story. Cars are one of my big sources of good and bad fortune. Recently went out ready for a trip and the car wasn't. The battery was absolutely dead. So while I was upset, I let go of the story of, oh, my trip is ruined. I can't go at all now. I'm going to have to make phone calls. Hassle, expense, blah, 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 getting this fixed. And I just went into the body. How am I feeling? So this is the first foundation. In other words, any of the foundations of mindfulness are places where we can go to fix a bad situation, or at least get to the point where it's no longer going to cause us distress. My experience is that once I am aware of what the mental background is, and how it's affecting me immediately, then I can kind of hold at arm's length the positive or the negative judgment that I've made about what's going on. It's really hard to discover that your battery is flat out dead when you really wanted to go somewhere. And, you know, start looking at, oh boy, I get to go to the auto parts store. But it's possible to recognize that neutral is an option. It's just something that's going to have to be done, like that grocery store trip. You can get through it without losing any structural integrity. I don't want to leave you with the impression that it's only the bad fortune that can cause us trouble, because we can get into some serious unhappiness with good fortune as well, particularly if we take that personally. A lot of us really want to somehow take credit for the good times. I know I do. You know, if I win a prize or get an award or get something published or, you know, whatever, I'm hot, you know. I'm just firing on all syllables. Yes, cylinders. And so it's, you know, I get the credit. It's mine. And I get this wonderful uplifting feeling. You know, there's this sort of ebullience that comes with, oh, wow, I really did that well. And then there's that flow of events that changes the picture, and it turns out that this prize that we won is actually going to end up costing us money. This happened to my wife not too long ago. It's a very nice honor, but she had to ship a drawing to the East Coast so that they could photograph it, put it in this book. And there was the hassle and the expense. And the prize didn't have any money coming with it. So, you know, things change. At least it wasn't a scam. She checked that right out. The honor is nice. The I'm taking credit for this attitude may be completely justified. But the problem is, at least in my experience, when I take credit for good fortune, then I'm kind of stuck with the responsibility for the bad fortune. Why is it going like this? What have I done wrong? Why me? Someone reminded me today of a quote from Shakespeare, which she was paraphrasing. And now I can't remember the paraphrase. But it was basically this, that events come to us neither good nor bad. And we name them that. So the implications for our meditation. Now, I talked previously about daily practice and what we can do when we realize, you know, that we come to this event with certain attitudes and moods and everything. You know, we can kind of counterbalance that as the day goes along. You know, one trick I do when I'm driving, if somebody does something that's going to make me late or whatever, and that's bad fortune, and I'm starting to blame it on them and get mad at them, if I can remember that I myself have done exactly that in the past, then that kind of leans away from that tendency to be judgmental and resentful. But how do we deal with it in meditation? And the answer is, meditate a lot. Because of those habits that I was talking about in response to the question about when does it get easy to come back to the breath? And the answer is, don't worry about easy. Because every time you come back to the realization of what your mind is doing, you get a chance to deal with it. You get a chance to recognize, accept, investigate, and not take it personally. That's an acronym, RAIN. Recognize it, accept it, investigate it, and not taking it personally. And we get a chance to explore the foundations of mindfulness. And the fourth foundation, by the way, after we've explored how it makes us feel, whether we like it or not, what kind of mental wallpaper we brought to it, then we can, while we're sitting there in meditation, we can say, wow, that train of thought and my reaction to it is explained in the Dharma. I've heard about that in Dharma talks or someplace I've read. And, you know, yes, it's okay to do this kind of mental activity in meditation, because it's the accepting and the investigating. It's noting. And noting that there is a teaching about what just happened in the mind. And this gets us more and more familiar with the bottle of stuff, the mixture of mental phenomena that we bring to every moment. And we start to understand where our mental wallpaper came from. We don't figure it out. We just recognize it. We feel the effect. And when we do this over time, eventually, we're going to be visited by insight. And it's just going to kind of bubble up into our awareness that, oh yeah, this has something to do with this habit that I've had or something that happened to me many years ago and caused me to believe that the world was this way when it really isn't. It's kind of no way at all. Neither good nor bad, just something that's happened. And whenever I talk about good or bad fortune, I like to remember that, you know, how pointless labeling it good or bad can be, because a lot of it is what is called in Buddhism the eight worldly winds. It's four pairs of things about which we can do usually very little. They're going to happen. We can't keep it from happening. We can try, but they're subject to a lot of other forces in the universe. And that is pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and ill repute. I mean, look at the people who are famous one day, and then the newspaper story comes out, and they're black sheep the next day. Probably the very same person from one day to the next. But that wind has shifted. It's a wonderful thing to be able to work with, to be willing to work with, and not just accept what your mind tells you about good or bad fortune. It's really telling you more about itself, how the mind works, and that's a wonderful thing to work with. Thank you.